you?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Planet of Terror podcast. I am your host, Cortez the Killer. Tonight, I am joined by two very special guests, Italian Stallions Dominic Portala, writer, director, producer of the independent horror feature The Darkness Within. Welcome, Dominic.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. What's up, kids?
And the fantastic Jeff Capodanno of the fabulous blog The Man Cave.
What's going on, everybody?
So the last time, or actually I should say the very first time that we recorded this podcast with these two fine gents, there was a lot of technical glitches, a lot of people involved, a lot of cooks in the kitchen, inviting too many people into the conversation, and then rounded off by quite a bit of inebriation. So we had pretty much recorded the podcast to end all podcasts, but it got all jacked up, and so we're here, and we're hoping tonight that we can kind of channel and recreate that magic. You guys in?
Oh yeah, that sounds about right. Take two.
Yes. For those that want to, you know, hear the epic podcast, it's going to be available on the special feature site. So.
Side one, track one.
Yes.
Exactly.
Nice. So I thought about, like, just giving a shout-out to my boy Jeff over here. He popped his podcast cherry today by posting his first episode with the fabulous Ron Scott of the Strange Kids Club. So, Jeff.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I did. I recorded it with Ron on a Sunday afternoon. I did some put some video edits into it. So I worked on it a little bit this week and had to split it in half because it went about an hour. And, yeah, thanks for giving me a shout-out. Yeah, I just put it up. And if, for those listening, definitely go ahead and check out my maiden voyage into the world of podcasting.
I love the intro with Baroness, which is one of my favorite indie metal bands right now. Going on.
Oh, man, I love them. That's good you like that, James. I didn't know that.
That was, yeah, they're pretty awesome. I like kind of how they kind of go shifted away from – some kind of their heavier elements, some more of like a bluesy metal vibe right now, especially with their last album, pretty kick ass. So kudos on the music choice there.
Thank you.
And just an overall really kick ass podcast. It was cool just kind of hearing you guys shoot the shit about everything from indie horror to comedy films, as well as wrestling. And I hope that continues into the second half.
Yes, yeah, he did, Jeff. Jeff, I was going to say, you did a really smart thing by making it like a cliffhanger. You know, that was that was the right way to go. And it also, you know, it doesn't hurt that you have the voice of an angel, so.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
You know.
an angel has got his nuts tied with a rubber band, but, you know, I got to put a little bit more bass into it, but I'll work on it.
There you go, man.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I'm going to have part two sometime next week when him and I just kind of – and we start talking about some really funny stuff. So, yeah, stay tuned for that for those listening.
Nice, nice. Well, you're a natural kid. Can't wait to hear more.
Thanks, man. It means a lot.
Well, one of the interesting things you guys brought up, he had brought up some points. I think he brought it up in his discussion of recent horror films scene. And he had mentioned a Serbian film. And that was a film that kind of struck a chord with me last week. I had posted a review on the blog. And I know you guys haven't seen it yet, but what's kind of like your general feeling around it right now? Just from, like, are you guys super excited to check it out? Is it kind of low on the totem pole? I know for me personally, I got a screener about 3 months ago, and I just now got around to seeing it. Like, it was just one of those films. I don't know if it was because of the hype or the notoriousness of some of the worst scenes. They kind of put me off from seeing it, but, that was kind of my experience. So kind of what are you guys' feelings on the film right now, just in general?
I haven't seen the flick. I've read a couple things online, some good, some bad. I kind of skimmed over what you'd written and, you know, the clause kind of came out in your review.
Yeah.
So I'm wary of it. I mean, I'm totally gonna, I'll definitely check it out as soon as I get a chance. But I, you know, I haven't seen it, so I don't have any crosstalk for it. I can't really say either way whether it's good or bad. I know kind of what's out there in the stratosphere, and I think it's like, as far as I'm aware, it's a very mixed bag. There are some people who really enjoyed it and dug it a lot, and then there are some people who gave it the Cortez treatment. To put it lightly. So.
I think it brings up an interesting question, though. Is too much too much? I mean, like, is there ever a point where you just go, you know what, that's just like, I get you're trying to make a greater point. You know, there's supposedly some political allegory going on there, and, like, I think, to me personally, when I watched the film, I thought it was way too much of a stretch. It's like, for all the insanity, and I won't really recount the scenes. I mean, it's pretty gruesome and pretty nasty, and, you know, a quick Google search, you know, you could find out that information. But I guess the question to you guys, and I think it's an interesting one, is there too much? Can you go too far to prove a point?
Can you go too far? Like, is it? I mean, I know that, you know, I like gore as much as the next guy. You know, I wouldn't be adverse to anybody making a graphic film. Just right. personally, from my own taste, I really prefer less is more. I really like the idea of creating the horror in the unconscious mind of the viewer. You know, I think when we had talked about American Psycho as an example of a movie that people, when they talk about it, they remember it is so violent. People talk about how it's ultra violent. And if you watch that movie, like I've watched it, no joke, easily 50, 60 times now. The movie really doesn't, I mean, all the violence really takes place off camera. And one shot in particular that I love is a scene where Patrick Bateman lures this blonde model into a cab. And, you know, you've already seen him do some terrible things, so you kind of know where it's going. And the next shot, it just jump cuts from her getting into this cab to him sitting at his couch in his office, and he's just playing with a blonde strand of hair in his fingers.
Right.
And it's like, that to me is like, that is such a terrifying, because what that whole ordeal that happened between them two is like its own movie that played out in my head. It's going to be different from pretty much anybody else. So that's just my take on it. I if you can do graphic violence and do it well and make it serve the movie, then, you know, more power to you. But if you can pull back and kind of use less is more, then that's even better as far as I'm concerned.
So let's get a little bit more specific. So in the Serbian film, it clearly depicts child rape and incest. Is that pushing the envelope too far? Is that, I mean, no matter, you know, what point you're trying to make, political or otherwise, and, you know, and sometimes it's hidden under the veil of art, is that too much?
Well, I'm like Dom. I haven't seen the film. You know, Ron had described it to me as a Faces of Death kind of film.
Right.
Not like that. I mean, but it's, you know, kind of in the same vein. And I wouldn't be somebody that would feel right to take away someone's artistic license. But at the same time, if you're going to make a film, you want people to see it, and trying to find the word I'm looking for. Like, if you really want to, you know, you want to shock people and have some kind of shock value. At the end of the day, it's great to be shocking, but make something that's going to be memorable.
Right.
Don't have gore for gore's sake. I mean, so child rape and incest. Okay. Did it really play like a real role in the film, or is it just in there so a lot of us can sit around and say, "Ooh, that you know, that film was crazy. That was disgusting." And
that's the way I felt. And, like, you know, there was this whole diatribe in the middle between. So the lead character's name is Milos, the one that's being asked to, like, commit all these atrocious acts. And Vukmir is the guy that's funding this entire project. And he goes into, like, this long diatribe about society and politics and yada yada. But then at the end of his diatribe, he kind of goes in, but what I'm really trying to do, that's one of my dogs, by the way, Bart. But what he says at the end of that is, like, really what I'm trying to do is create a new genre called newborn porn. And at the end of that, it was like, it completely, to me, it negated the whole point of it, right? It's like, you know, so I've kind of built it up to kind of be this, but then at the end of the day, it kind of That's all kind of stricken from the record when I make this claim. But what I'm really trying to do is this and just kind of shock the piss out of you. So that's kind of what I got out of it. And again, I won't I don't want to get too far off on a tangent here about the film since you guys haven't seen it. I just kind of wanted to throw my two cents in from the horse's mouth, so to speak, because I know you brought it up in your podcast, Jeff. But that's just kind of what the sense I got from it. There's really no substance to it at the end of the day, and it was really just shock for shock's sake.
Yeah, I mean, guys, I mean, this is something we're talking about now, and then in another couple months, somebody else is going to come out with a brilliant film, whether it's an independent film or we're going to be talking about for a long time. Are we even going to remember this? I mean, not to do a little cheap pop plug here, but, you know, my fellow co-guest here with me, Don Portala, made a film, a good horror film, psychological thriller, if you will, Not a Drop of Blood. I remember everything about it, and I'll remember it for a long time. So, like I say, you don't want to take someone's artistic license away, but at the same time, if you're gonna go out there and be crazy, at least try to make something that's really supposed to be memorable, and you know, not something that's just gonna be a fad sideshow freakish kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That right there is why I've personally hired Jeff as my publicist.
No, but at the same time, you know what? It's actually Jeff just kind of like, I think he and I are like on the same wavelength here tonight or something. But it's actually a perfect segue into my next topic. So before we kind of get into that, Dom, give us a little bit update on your film, The Darkness Within. So if I can kind of preface a little bit, I'll say that your film ended up on my top 10 list of last year, as well as a few other bloggers. A great psychological film that's really engrossing and very character driven. I kind of harken back to your Hitchcockian type thriller film. So if I can kick it over to you a little bit and talk a little bit about the film, and take it away, sir.
Sure. Well, for anyone who hasn't seen the trailers or hasn't heard about it, the movie is about a young couple, and they move into a basement-level apartment, and the main character, Chad Morgan, basically becomes convinced that his creepy neighbor is stalking him, and if I'd done my job, what ensues is a very, hopefully, psychological mess of a horror story. As far as updates on the film, right now we're doing a very short DVDs. We just want to get the movie out there. It's played in several film festivals. We're actually waiting to hear back from a few more. And, we're just trying to get the movie out there. The movie was made for about $3,000. It's an incredibly, incredibly micro-budget movie.
Wow.
And it's the fans that we have garnered and the people who have seen it, it's a testament to guys like you and, the cats over at The Liberal Dead, whole bunch of other blogs online, From Midnight with Love. I'm forgetting some few people here, but there's been a great groundswell of people who have kind of, sat down, checked out the movie, given their opinions on it, good or bad, have taken the time to write about it and pass it around to other people. So, let me just take a moment to express my gratitude to you guys for having checked it out and reviewed it so well.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Just kind of doing my small part, really. So I think it's, as mentioned, I think kind of like this, the kind of subject that I was talking about, that Jeff had kind of got it into, away from like just these shock for shock value type films, like a Serbian film and the Hostels of the world. And, a trend that I've been recognizing, at least with the screenos that I've seen over the last few months, is kind of like a return to more traditional type of story. Not traditional in the sense that, you're following typical genre tropes or anything like that, but just more of a type of film where it's really story-driven, like a really strong, engrossing type of story, very heavily character-driven, and that just creates a really genuine sense of suspense. Films like Dawning, your film.
Let's just grab some distribution.
Yes, I'm really, really, really excited about that. It's a film I've been following for a while. Anyone and everyone that I can talk to about the film I have, and I actually showed it to my dad last week. He's actually the man that got me into horror films, and he was blown away by it. So I can't wait for it to get out there to the masses. And it's been a long time coming. I mean, you should just hear the stories from writer director Greg Holcrew. of the stuff he's gone through different distribution companies and every excuse that he's heard in the book, you know, from not having any big name stars to it's played too many film fests, so it seems like it's out there too much, and I want to be the one to have discovered this film, yada, yada, yada. He's pretty much heard everything. So it's been really awesome and satisfying to hear that, you know, we've done a kind of our small little part as bloggers, but really at the end of the day, a good film is a good film, and that kind of won out in the end. And it's been picked up by Breaking Glass Pictures, which I think right now is the best independent distribution company going on for right now for horror. They've taken a lot of chances on very nano-budget horror films, and that's something I think we can all kind of appreciate. But so aside from Dawning, you know, there's films like yours, Dom, and most recently a film that I checked out that just blew me away is called Fugue. I'm going to be interviewing the writer-director, Barbara Stepanski, next week. A great ghost story slash revenge film, which sounds kind of odd, but it really fits and melds perfectly together, those two subgenres. So just kind of my overall comment, or I guess kind of question to you guys. Do you guys think that films right now, it's just, I think we've kind of become exhausted by all the zombie films and vampire films that are coming out right now, but it seems like more inventive, more directors that are willing to take risks are going to back to more of the traditional type of storytelling. What do you guys think about that feeling, or that... Do you get a feeling that's what a lot of filmmakers are starting to fall back on?
I think from an independent perspective, I want to say a lot of the screeners I've been getting recently is what we've all been getting, not just me, that have been circulating. I have noticed that there's definitely more of like suspense and storytelling going on, as opposed to, you know, the plethora of super, you know, oversaturation of supernatural type flicks, you know, that deals with, you know, zombies and vampires, werewolves, et cetera.
Right.
I'm starting to see with 2011 there being a change, and I mean, change is always good. I'm sure if myself from 5 years ago could time travel, I'd probably time travel and smack myself in the head and say, how could you be said there's too many zombie movies? You know, what would you crazy?
Right, right.
But I mean, you know, it's true. There's always change, and from a mainstream perspective, no, I still think that you're still going to see a lot of supernatural elements in films. I mean, it looks like now werewolves are going to make the, you know, now werewolves are going to be the next zombies and vampires.
Right.
That seems to be the hot thing. But from an independent perspective, some of the things I've been seeing, you know, whether it's short films or, extended short features or even full lengths, it's been going back to story making. I mean, a storytelling and a suspense, and it's been refreshing, and it's definitely going back to some, you know, older roots of filmmaking, and it's, yeah, I that's something I've noticed. I mean, from my perspective, that's what I've noticed.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'd just say from a filmmaker standpoint that, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, no matter what genre you're working in or any type to make, the idea you want to start with is to, you know, start with the character, start with the story, make something that's interesting on that level. I think Jeff's right on with everything he's saying, but just to add, too, is that it seems like the film industry itself moves in cycles. You know what I mean? There are trends and things that kind of come back and leave.
Right.
You look at something like 3D. That's a perfect example on a wider scale of, like, you know, something that was big in the 50s and went away and came back in the 80s and now is like a big thing now, and, you know, it may or may not stay for a while. But, you know, you look at like the horror genre, you know, Scream kind of brought back the 80s slasher thing for a little while, and then in like the early 2000s you had a lot of the torture movies coming out, and then those went away after we had kind of been oversaturated with them. So yeah, I think ultimately you're just going to see cycles. You know, you're going to maybe more intense character driven type story, maybe like the 70s type movies, where, you know, I mean, Taxi Driver's not a, I wouldn't say is considered a horror film, but maybe something more akin to that, that's more intense and character driven. And then it eventually, you know, a couple years down the road, it'll cycle back and we'll find something else.
Right.
Just to throw this out real quick though, as far as werewolf movies becoming the next thing, I really hope we don't see that, because I'll say this right now that I think the best werewolf movie I've seen, and it's an independent film, and I don't know if they're gonna be able to top it as far as I'm concerned, as far as recent history, is the original Ginger Snaps. And that's a flick not enough people have seen. If you haven't seen Ginger Snaps,
it's a great film.
Yeah, I mean, to me, talk about just changing that subgenre and just completely throwing every convention out the door, and then getting into the whole, female adolescent just kind of like coming of age and like coming to terms with the changes that her bodies are going through, and then having it equate to becoming a werewolf, I thought was just absolutely genius.
And almost having it used as an STD at one point.
Like, yeah.
It's just really cool. Really, really cool.
I think it started to lose its way after a couple of the sequels. But that first one, yeah, that's pretty. I thought that was genre defining. I mean, honestly, like there hadn't been too many. I mean, werewolf films, I think, are very, very much more hit and miss than other subgenres. Dog Soldiers for me was another one, which was just phenomenal.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I've heard great things.
Oh,
about that.
Man.
That's good. You've
got to see Dog Soldiers.
I'll totally pick that up.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the Ginger Snap sequels. And they just had a marathon last weekend or something on Sci-Fi, but I wasn't by my TV. But so are they good or worth checking out? Or?
I'm trying to remember. I think I got up to three, and really I can't remember too much about them. So I would say
there's more than three?
Yeah, there's more than three, I think.
Oh,
God.
I'm pretty sure.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you could even consider like Jennifer's Body like a unauthorized sequel, because it seemed to be borrowing. So I mean, Jennifer's Body kind of. I don't know if you guys saw that flick with Megan Fox.
Yeah. I did.
Which is why I saw it.
Personally, I thought it was a little too heavy-handed, and I didn't really dig it. And like a lot of the dialogue was trying to be kind of like too. Clueless, like, I mean, like, with kind of, like, its snappiness and just trying to, like, invent its own teenage language, so to speak. But it was all right. It was okay.
No, I wasn't really a fan of it. I just remember watching it, like, seeing how much it was borrowing. It kind of felt like it wanted to be Jennifer's Body. It kind of wanted to be Ginger Snaps meets Heathers.
That's right.
Kind of what I thought the whole time I was watching this movie.
That's a great comparison, as a matter of fact.
That is.
Ginger Snap and Heathers, that's a perfect comparison, or parallel there, yeah.
Which yeah. on paper, that sounds like an awesome flick, you know.
Right. Not so much.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw it, I mean, I guess it wasn't what I was expecting. It was like, you know, I got in the batter's box and someone threw me a gyro ball. I didn't know what to even think about it, but, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say I liked it. In fact, I didn't like it. But, yeah, there was something very... that reminded me of Heathers, and there was something else I couldn't put my finger on. I think Dom just nailed it. It's definitely Ginger Snaps.
Yep.
Ginger Snaps and Heathers.
There it is.
And there it is.
Megan Fox.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
she disappeared.
Yeah, what happened to Megan Fox? Like, she's kind of after the Jonah Hex movie, which I heard is just terrible. She hasn't done much.
Well, she had her chance to be in Transformers 3, so.
Oh, that's right. She kind of wanted to disassociate herself completely.
Yeah.
But Dom brings up a good earlier point. Like, I mean, everything is kind of cyclical, right? But I still think, like, I just have this overwhelming thing. And I hope I see more of it, honestly, because I'm actually kind of... really hoping that I see a lot more films that kind of return back to the traditional mold of building, like, genuine suspense and fear in the audience, you know, that just kind of keeps them along and until that, you know, that grand reveal or that hit or that finish at the end that just kind of leaves you floored. So I'm hoping for more films like that in the future.
So you're saying you're hoping that more filmmakers will be able to, like, pull off, like, a thing?
I'm sorry, what was that last part? I think you cut out.
I'm saying, are you saying you're looking forward to seeing something that that can build towards a really effective twist ending?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I'm not necessarily like the one that just completely like, I don't know. So I think Dom, Your Film and Dawning, which I think are two prime examples. The twist kind of comes about very organically. It doesn't come out like one big aha moment. You know, there's just a build and a build and a build and a build, and it's all leading up to something. But when that build or that kind of revelation happens, it's not just one big, you know, like end of Scooby-Doo when somebody's like unveiled, like, oh my God, it's Old Man Withers. which when you're a kid, that's just like, holy shit, it's Mr. Withers.
Is it Old Man Withers?
But now when you're older, you're like, oh my God, how was I fooled when I was a kid? It's not like that. Like I said, it comes about very organically, and it kind of leads into this, like, oh my God, how did I not see this coming? Like, even the most, like, cynical of horror fans would go, oh my God, I've got this figured out. Yeah, this is like every other film I've seen like this in the past, until, like, you're completely do this 180 at that point. But again, it's not like this big kind of beat you over the head type of thing, which a lot of filmmakers employ. And it just kind of comes about very naturally. That's the type of film I'm talking about.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, I know exactly what you're saying too, where you feel like you're watching a movie that like tries to like tag on a twist for the sake of, you know, having that 1-2 punch at the end.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's just like, that's what it's hinging itself on. It's not focused on anything else like the actual story or the actual characters where you actually empathize with them or they're relatable in any way whatsoever, which is so great about Your Film and Daunting and a few others. Yep.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's one heck of a twist ending. And I, like I said, I thought I had it figured out, and I'm not going to spoil this in any means, but what happened was great. But I enjoyed the ride getting there as well. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just to make a movie with a twist, just to have a twist sake. It was, when I went back and watched it again, I saw all the clues and everything, how it led up to it. And well thought out, my friend, well thought out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
You know what?
It wasn't like,
I think like, let's just try to talk at the same time. Well, what I was going to say, and Dom, actually, this is kind of interesting. I thought about your film last week, and I was watching films with my old man, and I had never seen Hitchcock's Frenzy before. Have you got either one of you seen that?
Yes.
Well, you know, I haven't. I'll be honest.
I have.
Dom, you haven't? Oh, it's phenomenal. It's one of the types of films that are very much a prototype for some of the early slasher films. You know, it's basically about this guy going around London with a necktie, and that's kind of and his MO is preying on women and using his necktie as his killing device. And you know, the police are kind of, you know, they have no idea, they have no clue, no suspects, anything like that. And so we kind of catch up with the killer midway through the film after a few red herrings, which were just played out so great. And, you know, just very discreet, too, not, like, in your face, like, oh, it's so obvious, it's this guy. It kept you second-guessing characters as they kind of appeared on screen. But when we finally figure out who is the killer, like, kind of midway through, we follow him up the set of staircases. And it's just in a very Hitchcock type of way, framed so perfectly as we kind of follow the killer up the stairs into the apartment of this woman. And then we see the door close to her apartment, and the camera backs out from the apartment, back down the hallway, through the stairs, and then through the entrance of the apartment building. And it's done so genius. You don't hear anything but the sounds on the streets. You know, there's vendors and there's people working and cars going by and things like that. But you see the camera pan out to the street, and you don't see anything that's going on in the apartment, but you know what's going on. You know the killer's there in the room strangling another woman. And when I saw that scene, it instantly reminded me of the scene in The Darkness Within, where you're painting the camera around as our lead actress and, you know, the lead actor, they're kind of coming to the realization of what's going on, again, without getting too specific about the film and this kind of grand revelation. But just the very same technique that was kind of happened, kind of like how this motion kind of swooped around the characters and led a lot to the imagination rather than just full-on showing what's going on, I just thought was genius. So, like, I guess another hats off to you, Dom. So that's kind of a roundabout way of giving you a compliment there.
Yeah, thanks. I'll take it, man. I'll gladly take being put in Hitchcock's company. I feel bad I haven't seen the flick now. I mean, I've seen enough, and Hitchcock definitely has a huge influence on this movie. I'd say probably the biggest influences on The Darkness Within would be Hitchcock and Kubrick. But Hitchcock, I mean, that dude just, he was the guy that had, you know, he used his camera as the way the shot, you know, I mean, his camera was like a weapon, and it was that perfect marriage of using visualization to accompany the theme and the story of whatever he was trying to tell, whatever he was trying to show you. And that's a one of a kind filmmaker. You're never going to get another Alfred Hitchcock. You're never going to get another Stanley Kubrick. I mean, and I think if you look at a lot of the best stuff that you've seen, you know, I bet if you talk to like Greg, who'd made Donnie, I bet he would cite both of those guys as influences among others. But
he did actually not so much Kubrick, but definitely Hitchcock. There's actually a lot of scenes in Donning, which takes place mostly in a cabin out in the woods, where Hitchcock was really good at using confined spaces. Mm-hmm. And in the same respect, Holtrud did the same within that to kind of give you kind of like this claustrophobic type of feeling. That just at any moment the walls were just going to kind of close in on you and suffocate you and just completely take you over. Definitely that was an influence there too.
One of the big choices we made early on when we were going to shoot the flick was, you know, because we're shooting. I shot the movie in my actual apartment, which was this little tiny basement apartment. It was kind of done by design. We're like, look, if we're gonna go make this movie for $3,000, we don't want our imagination to exceed our grasp, and that was kind of a problem that we'd had on our first movie, which I still love. My first flick, Duality, had great experience with a lot of the guys, and a lot of the people I work with ended up coming over and working on The Darkness Within. But one of the ideas that we came up with immediately was to play with the idea of claustrophobia, and that's why if you watch the movie, and people notice this and point it out to me a lot, is they'll say, like, wow, you know, there's a lot of close-ups. Like, there's a lot of, like, the camera is right up in people's faces for a lot of the movie, and there's this weird kind of shallow depth of field where the camera's always kind of drifting in and out. And my attitude was to try and shoot as much of the movie in handheld camera work as possible, and also to shoot, you know, in extreme close-up to kind of always, you know, use the camera to bring people into this feeling that we're, you know, it's claustrophobic. We're right in your face.
Right.
We're never kind of backing up to let anyone take a breath.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so, with the camera angles and the confined spaces and the lighting, I mean, you felt like you were in the room when you watched the movie. Like, you felt like you were there in a sense. I mean, it was choking. You were there.
Like you were experiencing everything that the on-screen characters were experiencing, and like you were right there, front and center. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right on.
So I want to talk a little bit about Mr. Ken Flott there, Dom, if you want to.
Hell yeah, let's talk about Ken.
So Ken is kind of the main villain, or I guess the perceived main villain of the film.
Right.
And he plays the character Mr. Reed, the next door neighbor that our young couple freaks out about. So tell us a little bit about Ken and what he was in his past life.
In his past life? I think he was a goat in his past life. Ken's a dude. I met Ken when we did our auditions for the first flick I made called Duality, and we'd actually casted the movie and had moved into rehearsals, and we lost our lead actor. The lead actor, the lead role of that movie is supposed to play, it's two characters, it's identical twin brothers. That whole movie was basically about these identical twin brothers, and one of them owed money to a drug dealer, and the thugs had kind of grabbed the wrong guy, so now they're on this 24-hour wild goose chase with the wrong brother trying to locate the other guy. So there was this, you know, the idea was like, whoever we cast in that lead role was going to have to really have some chops. And as soon as we lost the first guy and it wasn't working out, kind of bummed out. We weren't sure if the movie was going to happen. And we set up some more auditions, and we met Ken at the auditions, who I think at the time, you know, I don't know if I should even be saying this, but I think he'd just broken up with his girlfriend, was in, like, kind of a depressed place, and was, like, kind of looking for a free sandwich. So he came to the audition and was, like, hanging out, and he just knocked us out. He gave an awesome read. So we cast him, and he'd worked in theater. He'd done some independent film. He's also a stand-up comic for a while. He's actually told me some he doesn't like the name drop, but he's actually told me some stories where, like, you know, he'd met Dave Chappelle and worked with him and Stephen Wright and some other guys. And it's all fascinating stuff. And he's got a really sick, fucked up sense of humor too. So he was always a fun guy to be around.
I got a little bit of that on some email exchanges that we had back and forth back in, when I interviewed you guys for the blog.
And on the interview that you know we have, it's funny because I'm taking questions very seriously and trying to elaborate and you would email him and basically all his responses were basically like, yeah, Dom's got funny hair and he hasn't seen a fucking movie before 1990. He just likes to take shots at me because we kind of have that type of relationship. But he's a funny guy. And then I'd worked with him on a lot of stuff and I kind of wrote the character of Reed with him in mind, to sort of be like a complete 180 from when he played in Duality, because I knew he could do something really dark and make – he really punched up the role itself. The role itself, I feel like, on the script was maybe a little more sinister and kind of, you know, blank. And yeah. Ken kind of – what he did in a lot of the stuff that we shot was he kind of made it more charismatic. Like the character of Reed seems to really be having fun with the fact that he's freaking this guy out, you know?
Right.
And that's a testament to him. He is brought to the table.
The scene at the beginning that still freaks me out is when our young couple moves in, and that's like their first night in, and he's out there, he's watering the front lawn, and then when the character Chad comes outside later on in the evening, he's still there doing that, and that just creeped me the hell out.
You know, it's funny, man, it's funny you mention that, because, like, the first 15 minutes of the movie, I feel like, I feel like if you can get through the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie, most people tend to, if they can get through that, they really like the film. And I think the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie is really playing with this dynamic of like, comedy, in a way. And we would always get, like, that scene in particular, people would laugh. But it was always this very uncomfortable laughter. Like, they weren't laughing like they knew it was, they thought it was a joke. It was like they were laughing because it was just strange. It was very, and I really dug that. That was one of my favorite things when I would, you know, watching it with audiences, was like seeing the way people react to that and then react to the first scare in the movie, which is when he's in the window, which we get the same thing. It would kind of get this little hesitant chuckle, but you could tell it was very uncomfortable laughter. People weren't, they were unnerved by what they were seeing. And I was like, ah, this is. It's working. It's working differently than I thought it would, but it's working on some level. So
probably because we've all at some point in our lives have had a creepy next door neighbor, right? that's probably good. There's a nervous laughter there, like, oh yeah, I remember I had like old man Rivers down the street. He was a little creepy, or
that's.
Jeff's quiet. He lives in Philly. He's had some, like, creepy neighbors before. Come on.
I'm surrounded by creepy neighbors. I would almost like Mr. Reed to move in next to me, which, you know, I'd probably be a lot better off. No, I think one of the, I mentioned you, and I've told Don this offline as well, the character Mr. Reed, and I don't know if maybe that's the way it was written, or maybe it's just Ken's performance, but, you know, a lot of times you get these people that play creepers, and... You know, they're very timid, they're kind of spider-like, hiding in the corner, get you when you're not looking kind of a thing. And, you know, the character of Reed looked very in your face, and I wouldn't have been surprised at some point if he just went up to the main character and just punched him in the face. I mean, I don't really know if it was like a physical intimidation factor or just the way he was just very in your face. He wasn't trying to hide or anything like that. So I don't know, Dom, if you want to elaborate on that. I mean, that's what I got out of the character. That's what, to me, separated him, you know, I almost want to call him a creeper with muscles.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, Ken's like, Ken's like a tall, skinny guy. I mean, he's got like his give Nucci circa 2003. So it's funny that you say he's intimidating. But he's got a real presence. He's intimidating. Like a lot of the stuff that he did, and this is what's really fun is I like to do multiple takes when we shoot, and I would. Typically, when I feel like I have what I want, if we go like 3-4 takes in and I think I got what I need, I'll do one more sort of to just be like, all right, this is your take. Like, do whatever you guys want to do. If you want to change up some of the dialogue, you want to add something. And a lot of times what will happen is, the people I'm working with will do something really interesting. And then we'll be like, all right, you know what, let's do one more. And like another idea kind of keys off of what we just shot. So Ken, a lot of the stuff we shot with Ken, especially with Ken in this movie, is he's kind of playing that character at varying degrees. You know, there are some takes where he's very monotone and very understated and very calm. And then there are other takes where he's very kind of flamboyant and over. So when it got to editing, you could kind of mix those takes together and it would create this performance that was really, my favorite scene in the movie is actually when Chad's sitting in his car and Reed comes over and knocks on the window and he's just kind of leaning in and they're talking. It comes off like he's doing these very thinly veiled threats about him and warning, but it's played at this angle where he's really just looking for a reaction from Chad.
Right.
And like I said, a lot of that is Ken just kind of going. I mean, there's outtakes that are on the DVD and some stuff that's online where you just see kind of how intense Ken got and over the top and it worked. I mean, for me, like that's the shit you love when you get into editing. When you're like, all right, I got an actor who's really changing shit up a lot and giving me a lot to work with and play with. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So.
Great stuff. So this, what do you guys are you guys excited to see anything coming out in like the either the local Cineplex or any other independent productions coming out that you're particularly stoked about?
I'm eagerly awaiting my screener of Dawning.
Yes, yes, that should be coming to you right directly.
I'm serious.
Yeah, man. I really like. I know I talk a lot about it, and probably people are like, "Dude, shut up, man." But I won't stop talking about it until like every person I know that has seen it. Like it's really that great of a film.
Well, I mean, I know you talk about Darkness Within a lot.
Yeah, that too.
That's totally fun. It, so.
What's that?
I said
no,
that's
I said,
fun.
And I love it, so I'm looking forward to it. So.
Absolutely. What else do you guys? You guys have any desire to see Battle Los Angeles coming out on Friday?
I'd check it out. I mean, it looks like it could be fun. Aaron Eckhart has a pretty good track record of. Picking good projects, you know, he's Harvey Dent. Good for him.
I didn't know it was based on somewhat, very loosely based on real events. Apparently during World War II, after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, there was a naval base in L.A. that got, like, this weird that got this reading of incoming aircraft. And so, like, they deployed, like, these Marines out on the beach there, and, they prepared for, like, planes to come, and all they could describe is unidentified flying objects in the sky, and apparently they shot at them, and then they went away. So it's very, very loosely based on real events, and obviously this is a mass alien invasion rather than maybe a couple spacecraft flying over L.A. or something, which is... fine by me. I hope they blow up L.A. I'm not a big fan of L.A. I was born and raised in San Diego, and I'm a lifelong San Diego Padres and Chargers fan, so I say fuck L.A. Yeah.
There it is. Throw it down.
I mean, I'll see it on HBO or DVD or something like that. And James, I saw some kind of behind-the-scenes thing when I went to see a movie recently that talked about that World War II story. That you just mentioned, so
oh yeah,
it's probably something I see, but and I love Aaron's a great actor. That was probably the one. That's probably why I started paying attention to the behind the scenes when I found out he was in it. Then all of a sudden I saw like one of these hip hoppers came on like Akon or something.
Well, it's also, you know, it's got the stereotypical badass woman. We need to fill Michelle Rodriguez, so let's cast Michelle Rodriguez in this role. Then Dom, you'd probably be happy. Mrs. Former Tom Brady, Bridget Moynihan's also in it.
There you go.
You are a Patriots fan, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, was that a dig? I can't tell. Are you taking a?
Kind of, sorta. I don't like Tom Brady, and
I saw you'd posted something the night of the Super Bowl when you were just like, I'm glad Tom Brady's sitting at home right now.
Yeah, back in what was it? I think it was 07 when the Chargers lost to New England in San Diego within like the last couple minutes, and then the Patriots started dancing in the middle of our field on top of the Chargers bolt. I thought it was really disrespectful. So ever since then, I've had a profound hatred. So actually, New England's probably number three on my totem pole of hate in football teams. Rounded out by number two, the New York Jets, and then number one, the Oakland Raiders.
Oh, wow. That's
It's hardcore, man. It's hardcore, let me tell you.
I can't stand the Steelers.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, Steelers are probably number five for me, number five or number six. They always kick the crap out of us in the playoffs.
I remember that that playoff game, the New England. They were doing the Merriman dance, and
yes.
One of them ran over. I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was Harrison. Ran over to Rivers and grabbed him by his face mask and started laughing like right in his face, and I'm like,
LT started crying like a little baby and started saying like, hey, act like you've been here before, and it just got really ugly. Yeah. We'll have our day in the sun one day, I hope. Three weeks to the start of the baseball season. I'm actually pretty excited.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I'm not that excited anymore.
What? Oh, why? Because you've already got the National League East wrapped up? Is that what you're saying?
No, because I still don't know who's playing right field, and there's no Chase Utley. So, I mean, sure, the pitcher, all four of those, I don't want to disrespect Joe Blanton, but we're talking about the main four guys, right? I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to throw shutouts every night, but I don't know. As of this point, it's going to be an interesting season, and I'm not saying that to be weird. I'm, you know, no Chase Utley, no right fielder. It's kind of like somebody's going to score runs, but
absolutely. And I'm sorry, our dear listeners, but I could not get on the horn and talk to these guys without talking a little bit of sports, so. Too bad.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's fine, you know.
It's all good.
It's all good, Yos.
Hey, James, I'm sure there's people out there listening that are probably like, fuck the Phillies. That's right, they suck. You don't have Chase Utley. Eat it.
I was just amazed, like, so the first time I ever caught a game there at, what is it now? What's it called now? What's your ballpark called now out there?
It's still corporate Citizens Bank Park.
Well, I was thinking the old Veterans Stadium.
Veterans Stadiums as a parking lot.
Right. But I was thinking that was the original name way before. So I didn't know the new name. But anyways.
Yeah.
So my wife and I went out there a couple years back for my very first Phillies game, and well, number one, I got razzed pretty good because I was the only cat in the stadium wearing a San Diego Padres jersey and ball cap. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, why are you wearing that in our stadium? And then number two, I thought it was really funny that even in the first inning, you know, if the Phillies didn't score, you had pretty much three up, three down, that they would start booing. I'm like, dude, you still got like eight innings of baseball to play. What the hell?
I mean, it's rough, man. I think things have mellowed since the 2008 win. For sports fans, we all kind of needed that. Now even when stuff doesn't happen, you know, like 2009 they lost, I didn't really care. The Flyers lost in the Stanley Cup. I mean, you're pissed or whatever, but at the same time, it's not like, you know, you still feel like you got a little taste of victory sometimes, and you start thinking about people like, you know, the Padres or something, you know.
Spread the glory to the little guys, can you, please?
Yeah, I mean,
sprinkle some fairy dust.
I'm loving the American League East this year because I think some team named Boston went and got a lot better, where some team named the Yankees got a lot worse.
Jesus Christ! Yeah, Dom. By the way, you're welcome for Adrian Gonzalez.
Thanks, Dom. Appreciate it. I'm glad. I know you had a big part to play in that, Cortez. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, I brokered the whole deal.
Do you guys remember the video game for Nintendo, the original Nintendo system, Bases Loaded?
Oh yeah,
I've got both. I got really nostalgic, which is so funny. About 2 years ago, after years removed from selling my old system when I was a kid at a garage sale, I got all nostalgic and got on eBay and bought an old Nintendo Entertainment System, which works absolutely perfect. And I've got like over 100 games. And I've got both Bases Loaded 1 and 2.
Shit, man. Do you have, is it the top loader? Is it the...
Oh, it's the top load, man. No, I'm sorry. It's not the top load. It's the, it's like the flip up in the front, and you just...
The one where if the game didn't work, you used to have to take like the old black case and jam it in the top to hold it in.
So it would read the... So it fits in there good. I still have to blow on the cartridge and shit to get it to work sometimes. You got to do the old-fashioned blow, Which sounds incredibly sexual.
The old-fashioned blow indeed, my friend.
Yep.
But the original Bases Loaded, I just had a flashback. I remember this. When I used to play the original Bases Loaded, I always played as the Phillies. Always. Every time.
I played as Chicago always.
I mean, I didn't know. I was a kid. I didn't know. The Boston Pride, Red Sox, and all that. But the weird part is, I always won. I always dominated the machine with the Phillies. I don't 89 Phillies. I don't remember back if they were like a phenomenal team. But
absolutely not. Case,
and Bases Loaded, man. They must have tilted that game because. If you want to win, if you want to beat the computer, if anyone's sitting at home with a copy of Bases Loaded on Nintendo, play as the Phillies.
Yeah,
that might be your crowning achievement of glory, Jeff.
Yeah, use that left-handed side armor. He's wicked. I knew you're talking about. That was probably some disgruntled Philly fan. It's like, you know what? We're going to win one way or the other, and whether it's going to be a Nintendo Bases Loaded, it's going to happen, man.
Yeah, you should see those programs.
Side armor. We're going to make him a side armor.
Do you guys remember that game Maniac Mansion?
Yes.
Yes.
As I try to switch it back over to horror, sort of, as we're still talking about video games.
No, this is great. This is great because this is going to lead me in my next topic, so keep going.
Maniac Mansion, and I'm not... All right, I mean, I'm not... I just recently talked about it on my blog like a week or so ago.
Yeah,
I kind of did like an in-depth retrospective on it, or whatever you'd like to call it. Put up videos of some of the cool things you used to do, like when you used to be able to like microwave the hamster. And
shit! I do remember this. Oh my god! Yes, I remember microwaving that hamster. Holy shit!
If you would go ahead and then if that guy Ed, the one who owned the hamster, if he saw you, I mean, he would just run over to you, and the next thing you would see, it would just cut to a shot of like a tombstone. Because he'd kill you for frying this hamster.
See, and that right there, that is less is more. That's putting the horror in the unconscious mind. You just see him run at you, cut the tombstone, and you innately know what horrific thing has just happened.
Absolutely.
Like, you must have cut the limb from limb or something, I mean, I can only think of, like, the worst thing. Yeah, because he's screaming, and then he runs up to you, and then... I just want to know if you guys played it, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of like sci-fi horror B-movie, old-school B-movie kind of a thing, but, I mean, I used to love that game, and I don't know what made me think of it a few weeks back, and then I just wrote that, and I don't know, since we were talking old-school Nintendo, just thought of that game. The game was great.
Absolutely. I've got also, when I bought that set... Obviously, you guys had to have played Castlevania.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Actually, I remember it being a lot more easier than when, like, maybe I forgot all the tricks now that I'm older, but I got, like, the first three Castlevanias, and I thought it was pretty kick-ass.
Yeah, Castlevania 2 is awesome. Simon's Quest, that one's good.
And then, you know, back on the old PlayStation also, which I think still works on... I got the first generation backwards compatible PS3 where you can play Symphony of Night.
Oh, that one's good.
That one's badass.
Yeah, it's good.
So, Jeff, man, you've got Monster Mania this weekend. You getting geared up, man?
Yes.
Getting psyched, getting stoked?
I don't know when this is going to air, but whenever it does, as you know, if we're talking now, it's 10 p.m. on a Thursday Eastern time. So, yeah, in less than 24 hours,
badass.
Yeah, I'm going to be drinking, talking with some, fellow horror bloggerians.
So give us the whole lowdown, man. Like, you know, for our listeners, like, what's the convention about? Who you're most excited to see? Who you're hooking up with? Who's the most likely to get the most drunk on the trek?
Oh, that's going to be my friend Dan, Dan Patrizzi. Yeah, he will be the most drunk, and he'll be proud to admit that. I'm sure I won't. No, it's Monster Mania Con. It's 17. So now it looks like it used to be at Cherry Hill, I think, once a year, and then it went to twice a year. Now they do one in Maryland. So now I think now they're up to holding four events: two in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and two in Hunt Valley, Maryland. So they'll have this one that's coming up, and then they have in New Jersey, and then they have another one in August. So this year, some of the, I guess the highlights, if you will, of the show that are going to be there is ex-Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley is going to be there.
Really?
Yes. I freaking love Ace Frehley. I would love to meet him. Not to plug my blog again, but if you ever want to see one of the funniest TV interviews ever, I put up a two-parter from Late Night with Tom Snyder back in the 70s with Kiss. Ace is completely smashed.
Nice.
And it's hilarious and it's uncomfortable all at the same time. Even if you don't go to the man cave to check it out, Google it on YouTube. Guys, I don't know. Have you guys seen it? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. Uh-uh. It sounds funny, though.
I think it ended like the original Four's Reign of Kiss or whatever.
Nice.
It's great. So he's going to be there, and I've got when they all split to do their solo albums. Like, I'm not like a huge Kiss nut, but when they all separate to do their solo albums, Ace's solo album's the best. So I have a CD I was going to have him sign that I have of that. You know, I don't have the original LP. Also, that's going to be there is the cast of The Walking Dead.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just got the Blu-ray in today of season one.
Oh man, yeah. I know Emma Bell, the girl that played, alert, the one that dies.
Yeah.
She's in Frozen. She's also going to she's going to be there. Lori Holden, who plays her sister, and I can't remember his name. I feel bad, but the guy who plays the lead's best friend, who was banging his wife.
I know who you're talking about.
Black curly hair guy.
Yeah,
he's going to be there. So it's going to be the three of them, which is nice. The one guy, Norman Reedus, who was in the Boondock Saints.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be there, and I guess he canceled.
Bastard.
He was there in August. The Boondock Saints charge a lot of money for their autographs.
Really?
And it was a real turnoff. You had to wait in this huge room. They wouldn't take any pictures with you. You had to get all three of them sign it. So you had to get Sean Patrick Flannery. You had to get the Norman Reed. Yep, his name, the crazy guy with the beard.
Yeah,
in the first one. So you had to get him too.
I'm sorry, but I think that movie is like way overrated, personally.
Yeah, man, I'll throw my name in that hat too, man. And that's a Boston flick, and I totally think it's overrated. Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad movie by any. By any measure, it's a pretty decent movie. It's a Tarantino-esque, dialogue-driven flick, but it's not like, I don't know if I'd wait in a huge ass line to pay those guys a shitload of money to get their autographs.
Seriously.
Well, here's the thing about it. Just like for Carpenter, I waited in line, a long line. I got my autograph with him. He took a picture with me. He chatted. He was nice. No, they wanted you to go get their autographs with all three of them, and you had to get it with all three of them, and then you had to bring your picture back later that night at, like, 8 or 9 o'clock when, like, dude, Jeff's going to be drinking, hello. And we have to wait in line again so that we can get our pic with them separately.
That's jacked.
And I was like, oh, like, you know that guy John Carpenter, kind of a big deal? Yeah, you can just go get an autograph of him, $20, you know, take a picture, talk to you. So so anyway, he's not going to be there, and Emma Bell is, which is better.
So who are you most stoked to see?
Ace Frehley.
Really? Even though you're not that big of a Kiss fan?
No, I totally dig Ace Frehley, and like I said, if you guys check out his drunken videos on YouTube, I think you'll become a fan of Ace Frehley's as well.
Nice.
But I mean, I'd like to see The Walking Dead. It's really funny because, I mean, I guess you always want to go there and you want to, you know, meet actors and actresses and things like that. But I mean, some of the things I think the main thing I look forward to is going and seeing, like, you know, friends that you met that are going to be there from past shows, or going to be there. So, you know, like last year is when I first met John from Freddy in Space, him and his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I met the dudes behind the very awesome Kidner Trauma site.
I still haven't met those guys. Like, they seem very, very mysterious. Like, I don't even think I've ever seen a document or photo of either of those guys.
Oh, man, they're nice. They're really great guys.
Yeah, they're really cool. Like, I really enjoy that site. It's really cool.
First blog I ever read. And it was really funny because, you know, John and I had exchanged some things on Twitter just from following each other's blogs. And then I went there, and he's there at a table with Kidner Trauma. And I'm like, geez, I think I just sat at the freaking blogger all-star table or something. But no, we all got along and stuff. It was very cool talking movies. And, that's the main thing I look forward to. And the dealer's room, which is awesome, where you can go pick up, you know, all kinds of nice little horror, inchy kind of things.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have pictures in there, old VHSs for sale. It's fantastic.
Very cool. Sweet. Yeah.
Belinda Clark's going to be there from
Return of the Living Dead 4?
3.
3. Damn it. Yes.
No, I kind of got a thing for her. She's hot.
Has she aged gracefully?
Yeah, she looks pretty. I just saw her in, I'm trying to think. What was the last thing I saw her? I saw her in Vampire Diaries. Hot.
Is that the, like, show on, like, the WB or some shit like that?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, she was on that, and I checked it out to see her. She looks nice.
Nice. Very cool, man. Well, I hope you have a blast, man. I can't wait to hear your stories and see what things you got posted on the blog and take many a picture.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I want to balance my money. The thing, guys, do you guys watch that show Dexter?
I love Dexter.
I love Dexter. Dom, do you watch Dexter?
Yeah, you know, everyone keeps telling me that it would play perfectly to my sensibilities. I have not caught up with it yet, but I know
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, dude.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. I'm actually kind of ashamed to admit it, but I know that. I guess, like, the first couple seasons are like Netflix streaming, so I can probably bang those out in a weekend.
Get and, on that gravy train, man.
I will.
You'll get hooked, man.
I know. You guys are not the first people to tell me either. I hear on a daily basis how great that show is. But,
Dude, fucking RoboCop was in the last season, man.
Yeah, man.
A RoboCop.
What?
I said, how the fuck can you go wrong with RoboCop?
Peter Weller, man.
It was not aged gracefully.
He just, yeah, absolutely just not aged gracefully, yes. And he's like... One of the scenes that's so funny, and like he's being talked to by one of the detectives, like in his apartment, and fucking homeboy is eating fried chicken and drinking straight from a tequila bottle. It's an awesome scene in that season, and like it not only does it fit his character to a T, but I, like, you know what? That's something I could see him doing in real life. Somebody just cracked a beer.
It wasn't me.
No, it wasn't me.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it sounded like somebody cracked a beer.
I had a Diet Dr. Pepper. That might have been me.
Lame.
Oh, well, come on.
The reason I brought up Dexter was not just me being random. Last year when I went there, I spent all my money getting autographs. Like, Felissa Rose was there.
Oh, she's awesome.
Oh, man.
Did you get to talk to her at any capacity?
Yes, I did.
So, Dom, you know who Felissa Rose is, right?
Refresh my memory.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I know.
She was
you blow apples in the toilet, and you like it.
She was the lead actress, the little girl in Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Okay. I gotcha.
Anyway, she's a total blast to talk to. Like, just so unpretentious, just loves what she does. She loves going to cons, and she will just, like, chat you up for as long as you want to about, you know, what she did in her films and what she's currently doing in films. And I talked to her at length last year at a horror convention in Seattle called Crypticon. And I screened a couple indie horror films out there, and she did a special screening. It was kind of funny. They did almost like her and a few other castmates did almost like a total Mystery Science Theater 3000 commentary as Sleepaway Camp was going on. And it was absolutely hilarious. And Felissa Rose was smashed. Like, she was just drinking wine the entire time. And she had, like, this little assistant that would go out, like, at, you know, every 20 minutes or so to go, like, refresh her glass of wine and stuff. It was just absolutely hysterical.
Yeah, she was really great. At one point, I was in with a group right before it was, you know, our turn to go meet her. And all of a sudden, she had asked somebody that was with her, like her assistant. She goes, "You know what? I think this is great. I can't believe all these people are here to see me." She goes, "You know what?" She, like, ran from in front of the table, turned around, and asked her assistant, whoever was there, to take a picture of, like, everybody, like, all of us in line. She wanted to take a picture of just everybody in line, just, like, as, like, a group picture of, like, her gratitude or something, which I thought was cool. I haven't checked her Facebook, though, but, I mean, like, me and, like, Johnny Boots, for example, are, like, right up front. Because we were the next ones to go.
That's pretty kick-ass.
And, I mean, I went up to her and I told her that last scene scared the, like, bejesus out of me.
Absolutely, man.
It was creepy.
I was a teenager when I first saw that movie. You want to know, like, how, like, she's like, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, I was just, at that point, like, trying to figure out how to get into women's pants. And then to have that scene drop, you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, talk about surprise endings, huh? So I wound up telling her, I was like, you know, I'm like, you know, you scared me or whatever, but, you know, I've seen some of your newer stuff, and, I mean, you are just absolutely beautiful, and now that I'm seeing you in person, I mean, you're just flat out stunning. She started blushing me. She's like, oh, God, you're making me blush, and then she, for my picture, she, like, gripped me up.
She what?
Gripped me up.
Really?
Yeah. I must have flattered her.
As in, like, did she get a piece of your ass cheek or what?
I was just checking out her right hand to make sure she didn't have a knife that was gonna cut my head off. But she gripped me up. Yeah, she didn't grip down there. Then I would have had to charge her $20. No, so I mean, for all these people, I wound up getting all these autographs, and then they had the Dexter slide set. Someone made, like, his slide set. Like, with all the blood slides he has. You know that thing he keeps in the...
Yeah.
I ran out of money.
So, Dom, in the show Dexter, like, of all his victims, he basically takes, like, a... you know when you were a kid and your parents would buy you that microscope set, and it would have, like, the little glass plates on it that you would go, like, grab a weed from the backyard, look under a microscope or some other shit?
And then you would kill someone and then use their blood and pinch them inside there and keep it. Yeah, I totally remember those. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. What about? That's what he does. So, like, he takes a drop of blood from all of his victims and he puts them on those glass slides, and he has, like, a whole repository of this stuff, and it's all labeled by victim and stuff. So, wow, that's commitment right there. That takes a lot of time and effort for somebody to do something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, James, the label had, like, the people's names, like, from the show that he had, like, killed.
That's a little creepy.
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, it was just be like a cool little thing to have, and they even had like the Dexter, almost like those like Movie Maniac McFarlane items, you know, those like little like the, I don't want to say dolls, like toys or anything, but
right,
they had those things for sale too, and I ran out of money. So this time I'm going to kind of pace myself on who I get to meet, and you know, you could always run over to the bar and buy somebody a beer and get a quick picture. But this time I'm going to walk away with some goods.
Yeah, I mean, like that's one thing you got to do at a convention. You got to pace yourself. You can't blow your load too quickly, you know.
That's what I told Felissa Rose. No, she's a sweetheart. I say that in the most respectful way. She's a very nice person.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Can't blow your load when you're doing the old-fashioned blow. Bring it all back to Nintendo. That's how I'd like to get the You know who else is actually, you know, is pretty rad at those conventions? Because I know she does a lot of them. Is Danielle Harris?
That's what I hear. I have not met her yet, but I heard she's pretty kick ass.
I've always heard stories about her. It was funny. Me and Sean Pierce, the guy who plays Dixon in the movie, we were at Rockin' Shock because we'd found out last minute that we were going to screen there, and we got smashed, and we were really messed up. And we went over and we talked to Adam Green for like 20 minutes. Adam Green is another awesome guy. When you walk up to his, I don't charge for my autograph because I love you.
Yeah, he's super cool cat. Like I don't dig all of his films, but I mean he's a super cool, like, down to earth dude, and like he just appreciates fans and everyone. It's so cool.
Yeah, and Frozen's fantastic too. But
Frozen's amazing.
Oh man, yeah, it's good.
But we're hanging out there and we're talking to him for a few minutes, and then someone else comes over. It was kind of like, you know, like a chilled out time in the convention where there wasn't a lot of people hanging around. So we're just kind of hanging out, and someone comes over and we're talking to them. And for whatever reason, I remember we had to write something down, and Sean's just like, "Hold on a second." And he walks over to the table next to us, and he's like, "Excuse me, you have a pen?" And this girl's like, "Yeah, sure, here you go." And he's like, "Right on." And he takes the pen and we write down this thing, and I'm like, "Dude, you know that you just got that pen from?" And he's like, "Who?" I'm like, "That's Danielle Harris." And he's like, "Danielle?" I'm like, from fucking Halloween 4, you know, like, he's like, "Oh, shit." He's like, "Thanks for the pen, Danielle Harris." So she seemed, you know, if you're ever in need of a pen, she's probably got one on her. So just go up to her and ask her for a pen. tell her Chooch sent you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're talking to Sean Pierce, you're talking about Chooch, right?
Chooch.
Chooch.
My Gooch.
Not Carlos Ruiz, the other one.
No, this Chooch.
I need to plan a trip out there too, like with all you cats and like, yeah.
Yeah, we got to do something, man. I know Rocket Chalk comes around this year. I don't know what other conventions, but you know, you guys, we'll find a convention. I know Troma Dance is coming up in a couple weeks, and that's in Jersey. That's probably a big hike for you, Cortez, but.
Hey, I'll go anywhere. Just, yeah, this year's kind of limited for me, personally. Yeah. Weddings and family trips. Good times.
When is the Planet of Terracon?
Dude, that'd be awesome. I'm trying to start off in small scale out here in Dallas. I've been trying to do it for a while. I've been in talks with a local theater out here just to start up with some screenings for independent films. It's just, man, it's just between corporate day job and life, it's tough to get rolling. I mean, I barely have enough time right now as it is to write for two websites. But I'm going to try to do something this summer. That's my goal, to get at least one screening this summer of maybe a couple films and maybe a few shorts as well.
I know Mike from All Things Horror, you know, he does it out here. He rents the Somerville Theater.
Yeah, he's kick-ass, man. They're awesome. Along with Jeff and Mike, we've kind of had this kind of network of bloggers that we all recommend films to each other when we think something's worthy of checking out. It's been pretty cool, you know, just kind of turning on our fellow cohorts and partners in crime onto some really cool films and getting some exposure to those films.
It's God's work you gentlemen are doing, so much appreciated.
Or Satan. Or Satan. One
or Satan. Either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some deity is behind it all. And guys like me reap the benefits, so we very much appreciate.
Absolutely, man. I mean, yeah. Well, cool, kids. Well, I'm going to have to sign off. Old man disease is kicking in, and corporate life is calling in a few hours. So I thank you both for being on the show. I hope you had a lot of fun. I think this podcast kicked ass more than the last one did.
It was more coherent.
Yeah, probably. a lot less inebriated.
Yeah, the other one was like Bachelor Party podcast. Yeah.
The lost tapes of the Planet of Terracot podcast. Yeah, thanks, Dave, man. Thanks for having me. It was a good time. Jeff, get to watch the Mania safe. Have a good time.
Absolutely.
Get shit-faced and pimp out the man cave, because you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Cortez, and yeah, it's always good to talk to you guys.
Absolutely. A lot of fun, guys. Thank you so much. And for all you listening, this is our official sign-off, and join us again next time.
Take it easy.
Bye, everyone.
Demons should hear me. You're not a demon, are you?
You were slinging me!
Are they slow-moving, too?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.